whose opinion really matters. And I think the most important people that we should care what they think about us is ourselves, right? Because if you at the end of the night are not okay with what you're saying, what you're doing, then really it's not going to matter what everybody else is saying.
I know you are doing the best that you can right now. Your relationships matter to you. You are important. And yet over time, we get stuck. We get lost, or we stop showing up as our true self. We get hung up on the stories we tell ourselves, the comparisons, or feeling like we are not good enough. I'm Not Your Shrink is a podcast aimed at helping you feel connected to yourself, to others, and to live a life that is in line with what matters most to you. I'm Dr. Tracy Dalgleish, clinical psychologist and couples therapist. I bring you clinical knowledge and evidence-based research, experiences of sitting in the therapist chair, and being a wife and mother to talk about everyday issues we all face to help you change the dialogue in your life. Let's dive in. Hey, podcast listeners, you are listening to I'm Not Your Shrink, a space where we are learning to unbecome everything that isn't really us so we can live a meaningful life. A pattern that commonly shows up in the therapy room with clients is self-sacrificing. And sometimes we can look at this tendency to start to understand the patterns of what we have learned early on in relationships to remain close and connected to those we love. So I am beyond thrilled to share this conversation with you all about codependency and interdependence. And joining me is Anna Aslanian, a licensed marriage and family therapist. She is the founder and director of My Therapy Corner, a boutique private practice that focuses on individual and relational healing. Anna has been working in the field of psychological care since 2006 and is certified in EMDR with a focus on attachment, as well as a Gottman Method couples therapist and Gottman Method educator. She's passionate about helping people heal and grow through connection. Let's go into today's conversation. Anna, thank you so much for joining me today. I am beyond thrilled to be having you, your expertise, and all that you offer here on the podcast. I am beyond excited for our conversation today.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited.
All right. We have to start first with you telling us about you and the work that you do, and then we're going to jump into a great conversation around interdependence and building a healthy relationship and not a codependent one. So tell me about you.
So a little bit about me. So I've been in the field of psychological care since 2006 and worked with a variety of different populations just to see, you know, where my passion is. And I landed on trauma work as well as relationships, couples therapy. So I am the founder and director of a boutique practice, and we serve clients located anywhere in California, Florida, and New York. And our main focus is couples work, relationship couples work, but we also work with anxiety disorders and trauma, addiction. And regardless of if we're working with couples or with, you know, individuals, we are looking through that attachment-focused trauma lens, because I do feel like behind every label we have, every condition, every problem, there is something that's, you know, a small or a big trauma that's behind it. So yeah, we work with a lot of couples, and this particular topic is so, I'm so passionate about it because we see it so often and it's mislabeled. And, you know, I have a team of amazing therapists who are also trained in the same way as me, working with couples and individuals. So we've seen just amazing progress happen when you can look at all of this from a different lens of a trauma-informed lens. So, you know, we do a lot of emotionally focused couples therapy. I'm a certified Gottman Method couples therapist, as well as a certified trauma therapist. So we have all those lenses that we use. That's why, you know, I'm so excited to be here and kind of talk with you. I know you work with a lot of relationships and couples, you know, to shed some light on what codependency is and what it's not, and, you know, how to heal through it.
Let's even start with the definition of codependency there, and maybe even understanding how people
end up being in codependent relationships.
Yeah.
So I think that really ties into that trauma piece.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the old definition, which is still unfortunately commonly you see it, right? Like in books and in just people explaining what codependency is, there's an automatic sort of assumption that there is addiction happening. So in the past, it would be associated strongly with partners of those struggling with addiction. And there were a lot of also, not on purpose, but I think sort of happened that negative labels were attached to individuals where, you know, you're controlling or, you know, you're focusing on your partner instead of yourself. And so I think that's sort of the old definition of, you know, if you're focusing on somebody else more than you in a relationship, if you exhibit any controlling behaviors or trying to change someone else and mold them into how you want them to be versus who they are. You know, all of that was, I think, problematic because it was putting the fault at the person for being codependent. Like something is wrong with you. You're trying to control this person. You're trying to change them. And usually, again, it was associated with someone who was in a relationship with or came from a family where there was addiction present. But what we see is that that's not always the case. You know, of course, there are those behaviors that can come up where there is addiction present in a relationship, but it also comes up in relationships when there is no addiction. It also comes up in relationships where culturally the norm is to be more self-sacrificing and to put somebody else's needs before yours. We see that happen in dating, not even in relationships, but someone trying just to actively date and falling into certain patterns. You know, and just the list goes on and on how it can show up that has really nothing to do with addiction. But the underlying, right, that's the tip of the iceberg, and the underlying you know, concern is the trauma, the developmental, the relational trauma that's almost always is there. And when you look from that perspective, it's so normalizing and more human to understand that this is a way of, you know, seeking safety, maintaining safety in relationships, which is just the foundation for all of us human beings. We are relational human beings. We need others to survive and to be okay.
I like to remind people that dependency is not a bad thing. For decades, it's been labeled as a negative. And yet we know from neurobiology research, we know from attachment literature, we need to be connected to others. We need to be able to depend on them. But I think what you're saying here is that when we have experiences early on that are of a certain type, it prevents us from doing something really healthy in our relationships, which is the act of differentiation, which is the act of separation and individuating. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So just for listeners, let's define trauma, because that's another word that gets thrown around a lot. And for some of us, we might not actually understand what that is, or we might think, well, I haven't lived through war or a car accident. So what is this really? Let's put that into a contextualization.
Absolutely. So a trauma, you know, and yeah, I agree with you, like that word is used so often these days that everything is trauma and nothing is trauma, right? So you have people who say, well, trauma is only these big things that happen, you know, like surviving a war or assaults or, you know, natural disasters. And then everything else is not just suck it up, right? Like, why are you being a baby? And then others say like, no, like everything that was difficult is traumatic. And the truth is that trauma is anything that's been hurtful to your heart that you haven't been able to process. And it's so personal where we can't really give this black and white, this experience is trauma and this is not, because it's not so much what happens that's trauma. It's how your body, your mind perceive it and how it lands with you, right? So an example of, you know, trauma can be, you know, if you go through a breakup, right? One person can come out of it and they struggle, but they're okay. And then they move past it. And there are people who are really stuck, and that changes fundamentally how they see themselves and the world. And 10 years later, they're still struggling and they feel like they maybe are more guarded now and they have changed their view of relationships, right? So for them, that breakup might have been traumatic, right? So we have this big T traumas, you know, so of course, surviving, like I said, wars and sexual assaults, childhood abuse, all those things, you know, natural disasters, of course. But we often dismiss the small T traumas that also for most people accumulate through time. So Imagine if you've had several events like that, several breakups, or perhaps, you know, it's not so much what happened, but also what should have happened that didn't. That could be trauma as well. Like growing up in a family where you weren't nurtured, that you weren't seen, no one cared about how you were feeling, that you were scared to even voice your opinions or have an opinion, right? That you didn't know what you were supposed to feel or how you were supposed to act because you would get yelled at or the love and affection would be withdrawn from you, right? So it's not so much what happened, because if you ask those individuals, they'll say, well, nothing really happened. I was fine, right? But it's what should have happened that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So to define trauma, it's not really black and white, you know, this is it, this is not it. But my question is always, you know, with no judgment and self-compassion, you know, it's important to look within ourselves at the experiences we've had and see what are we stuck on still? What is still hard for me to process? What has led me to have a clear before and after of how I used to be versus how I am now? And not compare our experiences with somebody else's experiences, because we are individuals and we process things differently.
Yes. And just to highlight what you said there, Anna, is you had said that example of love and affection was taken away from us. And so it is that experience of our perceptions, our cognitions, our ways of viewing ourselves, others in the world, and how that's changed and impacted after these experiences. And when somebody, going back to that example, you said, if someone is taking away your love and affection, when you make a mistake or you express your needs, that is teaching you something completely different in the world. And if that then continues and impacts you to be different with others, that is something for us to look at.
Support for today's episode comes from Loop Earplugs. Driving in the car with the dog whining and the kids fighting in the backseat is my definition of overstimulation. And the more overstimulated I become, the more irritable I am, and then I am not the mom I want to be. So I decided to give Loop earplugs a try, and I'm so glad I did. I was blown away by how comfortable they are and just how adjustable they are for my individual needs. I also love that they're stylish in my ears and not some big chunky piece. I've been using the Loop Engage, which focuses on decreasing the amount of noise around me, whether I'm in the car with the kids or if I'm at the show. I love this option because I don't want to miss out on what's happening around me, but sometimes I just need a little bit of support. Plus, we love their kids' version, which we were able to take to the movies for our highly sensitive child. I'm so excited that Loop Earplugs is offering you, my community, a discount so that you too can tackle those overstimulating moments while also still being engaged with the activities and the people you love. Visit loopearplugs.com and use my exclusive code Loop times Dr. Tracy for 10% off your order. That's LOOPX. DRTRACY for 10% off your order at loopearplugs.com. Support for today's episode comes from Cozy Earth. You know I am all about caring for ourselves, especially in these busy years with our young kids. We are pulled in so many directions, but I think it's so important for us to find ways to nurture ourselves that require no additional time from us. I should probably let you in on one of my favorite things to do to look after me, and that is to get a good night's sleep on amazing sheets. I am beyond thrilled to bring you Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding products with an exclusive Mother's Day offer just for my listeners. We've got a code, it's SHRINK, S-H-R-I-N-K, for 35% off at CozyEarth.com.
Now, I didn't believe it until I tried them, but I firmly stand by my sleep improving with the temperature regulating technology, which adapts to your body's needs. For the past year, I have not slept on any other brand of sheets. Cozy Earth uses the very best fabrics, materials, and wares, offering superior softness for you to sink into at the end of those long days. I look forward to getting into bed, and we've been loving the sheets for over a year, and their sleepwear is so unbelievably soft, and it's made with such great quality. But the best part is that if you're worried about commitment, enjoy a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty on all of your purchases. Head over to CozyEarth.com and use promo code SHRINK for an exclusive 35% off, and give the luxury she deserves with Cozy Earth. You mentioned self-sacrificing as an experience under codependency. What other behaviors or ways of thinking might people have? That was one of the biggest questions from my community is, okay, what actually is this? Mm-hmm. So self-sacrificing is one thing, which is such the like, you know, I want to make space for myself. I want this. I need this. But oh no, my partner looks, I want to upset mm-hmm. them. I don't want to rock the boat. What else shows up under codependency?
Yeah. You know, other things that can show up is, you know, putting the other person first in when it comes to your well-being, right? And sometimes it's not even just that you're doing what's best for them and you're last on your own list. Oftentimes, people aren't aware that they're doing that, that they don't even know what they like. It's really abandoning yourself. Abandoning all parts of yourself in the sense that, you know, if asked, what do you like? What do you want out of life? Can you think about selfishly in this case? Because I think there's also an association that if I put myself first, then I'm selfish, which it's not. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference, right? Of not caring about somebody else at all and just doing what you want versus caring about the person who's with you, but also not, you know, abandoning and dismissing your own needs and wants. So a lot of times it's this dismissal of who I am as a person, that my needs matter, that I can also ask for what I want and need, instead of automatically just putting other person's needs first. But I think what we need to remember is that in itself is also a protective mechanism, right? So every coping method we use, even the bad ones, so to say, right? That in this case, like you're forgetting yourself and you're putting somebody else first. At one point was a protective factor in your life. At one point, it helped you survive. So if you grew up in a family, let's say, where love and affection was withdrawn from you, you got the silent treatment, or you could tell your parent was just unhappy with you, or maybe they would yell at you. Then you learn that in order for me to get that love back, which is just the foundation of what we need as kids. You know, I need to do what you want me to do. I need to be who you want me to be. So we come up with this amazing way of protecting ourselves by doing just that, which is great, right? It's brilliant. We figured this out when we were kids. And it worked because then our caretaker isn't unhappy with us. We keep the balance and we're okay. But then, you know, fast forward in adult relationships, that may not be so helpful anymore, right? And so these patterns are so, you know, they go back in our past, you know. So if you're noticing that you're putting somebody else's needs before yours, it's really hard for you to be assertive and speak up for where your needs are. Maybe you don't even know what your needs and wants are in a relationship. Maybe you haven't even thought about who you are as a person and you realize that you have kind of become who others wanted you to be versus who you actually are. That's many ways how codependency can show up. And of course, there's the obvious that, you know, you're trying to convince somebody else to change and do the work for them. You're making their appointments for, let's say, therapy and trying to convince them to go to therapy. You're trying to be their therapist and fix their problems. Like all those symptoms, you know, can also indicate that there is some codependency happening.
What do you tend to see with your clients around the awakening or new insights into this tendency? what does that look like for them? Because I know many people show up in our office not feeling good and struggling in their relationship.
Yeah, that's such a good question. Authenticity is what I see. When I start noticing the authenticity emerging and self-compassion in embracing that authenticity, it's such a rewarding and beautiful process for both for me to witness, you know, and be part of, but also for clients to get in touch with who they are, who they maybe have always been, but they were these layers of shoulds and I can'ts and, you know, barriers that were preventing them from being who they were always meant to be. And oftentimes, you know, the question is like, well, who am I? What do I even want? Who am I outside of this relationship? It's not so much about, you know, discovering who you are or finding out, right? It's taking away all these barriers that are preventing you from being true to who you've always been. So when the authenticity comes up, I'm like, yes, this is so, so great because I know they're on the right path. And the way I define authenticity in this, you know, case is, you know, when we take away all the different aspects of ourselves, all those different voices in our heads that tell us, this is what I should do, this is who I must be, this is what I cannot do, who are we left with, right? That, you know, inner wisdom, that place of just knowing when something feels right, whether it's an activity that you're doing or just speaking your truth. That's our authentic self. And just to nurture that and empower that, I think is the way from codependency healing, regardless mm-hmm. if you're in a relationship and you're doing that with your partner or if you're doing that solo.
Mm-hmm. Something that strikes me right there first, let me stay there for a second. Discomfort. Something that shows up for me right there is our willingness. So in order to be our authentic selves, it's a willingness to sit in discomfort. Mm. And even thinking with a group of friends recently of sharing some of myself in a very authentic way, afterwards, that voice that showed up for me is, uh-oh, what if they don't like you? You shared too much, you took up too much space, you whatever that is. And it was this wouldn't have shown up 10 years ago, definitely not 20 years ago, in the sense the voice that followed that was, it's okay if someone doesn't like every single thing about you. Mm-hmm. It's okay. And that felt so authentic in terms of me showing up in friendships, in relationships, of just being able to say, I'm okay, even if whatever it is.
Yeah, that's so important. I'm so glad you mentioned that. You know, for our listeners, I want to normalize that all of us want to be liked. Mm. So
we all want to belong.
We all to belong, right? I think there is this thing of like, don't care what others think about you and just be yourself, right? And there's almost like, I've seen, you know, in people, like, what's wrong with me that I really care about what so-and-so thinks about me? And I think it's Brené Brown who beautifully puts that, you know, and I'm going to paraphrase what she's saying, but the idea is that, you know, we all care about what people think about us, but we just need to be pickier in whose opinion counts, right? Like, you can't really care about the whole world liking you and everybody. It's not possible. And you don't want that. If you're really being authentic with yourself, you don't even like everybody. And you shouldn't, right?
Yeah.
But whose opinion really matters? And I think the most important people that we should care what they think about us is ourselves, right? Because if you, at the end of the night, are not okay with what you're saying, what you're doing, then really it's not going to matter what everybody else is saying, right? They can say you're doing the right thing, but if it feels wrong for you, right? So yeah, I think it's okay to say I care about what people think, but it's also okay to, like you said, feel the discomfort and take steps towards being the authentic you, even if that means people aren't going to, you know, object to what you're saying or doing, or you're going to lose some friendships or even a relationship. Because I think with codependency, we learned early on that in order to keep the relationship, I need to self-sacrifice who I am. I cannot be who I am. It's not safe for me to be who I am. And it's not so much a cognitive, like logical decision, like, I am now going to sacrifice myself. We don't think that through. It all happens in the background subconsciously. We're programmed that way, right? And like you were saying early on, relationships are so important for all of us. We need to have relationships, so we will sacrifice everything to keep that early on. And then that kind of stays.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
So I'm curious what you think about the transition into motherhood. And what do you think happens for women? So a lot of listeners are women, are parents. And in my practice, I see a lot of moms start to have these awakenings or aha moments after having a child. I'm curious if you've noticed that, and even shifting of who am I in relation to my partner? What's our relationship dynamic? What do you think?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. So, you know, I worked with, you know, couples preparing them to have a child, and also with women. You know, I'm a bringing baby home Gottman educator for preparing couples and individuals for becoming parents. And then I became a mom myself. My son will be 18 months actually tomorrow. And I got to say, you know, it's such a transformative experience, obviously, right? With for couples, and especially for women, not to leave men out. But, you know, if you're carrying the baby, there's also a lot of physical changes that are happening, and on so many levels, that unless one experiences that, I think it'll be, you know, again, me with all my training, like that, you know, when it happened to me, I'm like, now I know, like I know, like I know. It's not just the logically, cognitively, I know in theory, I actually experienced this and I know. And it's hard because women, again, this is generalizing, but majority of women are also raised to some extent to be more self-sacrificing than, you know, cisgender heterosexual men, right? We're kind of programmed almost from early on to be more nurturing and to take care of others. So that there's also that component when it comes to codependency. How much of your codependency is cultural, is societal, right? And then when you become a mom, who am I now? And that self-sacrificing, you know, power that we all have almost gets magnified, that like, I gotta put my child first, right? In some ways we do, right? Because we brought them to this world, we are responsible for them. And children are helpless without their parents. So the caretakers are responsible for them and they should come first. But does that mean we also forget ourselves? And how can we find that balance of giving and taking care of somebody else, but also finding ourselves? Right. And so what I find has been helpful is self-compassion, because so many women struggle with, I need to find the answer. You know, I don't fit into my old identity of who I was before becoming a parent, but this new one is stressful, or I'm not sure how I fit in this new one. Who am I? Where do I fit? Where do I belong? Right. And with self-compassion, and I had to go through this myself as well, in some ways I'm still going through it. Taking it day by day and also asking that same question, right? What feels authentic to me? right? Because it looks different for each person and there is no right or wrong, right? Versus, you know, for example, one person wanting to stay home full time with their child, the other one wanting to work more, you know, how much alone time you need versus how much alone time with your partner or your child. Mm-hmm. It all will vary. And I think the self-compassion of, hey, it's okay to come up with what works for you. You don't have to compare, and there is no this black and white right and wrong way of doing things. And you will emerge the person you're supposed to be if there's only self-compassion in the process. Because we all grow and learn when there is compassion. If we're being put down or judged, it's hard for us to learn, to grow, to become anything, right? In that environment, that harsh environment, even with kids, right? If someone is yelling at them, they're not going to learn. They're going to be in their protective mode. Their nervous system is trying to protect them. So with self-compassion, you know, I think that is the way through that when you add motherhood to it. But yeah, let me tell you, it's a, you know, you've been there too, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, it's something that I still bump up against, and I can find myself easily comparing my needs to my husband's or to someone else's. And I need alone time. I need time to be in quiet peace in my head and not in the minds of everybody else, right? Us as clinicians in front of clients all day. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of my narrative early on used to be around, why do I need all of this time? I shouldn't need all of this time for myself. Mm-hmm. And a really big switch for me around that has been, yeah, you need this time. It's okay to need this time. Your husband doesn't need as much time. Greg's fine without having this much solo time. And this is what you need. And that's okay too. And to not take that in to mean something about me or to not give up what it is that I want or need. Anna, one of the most common things that people experience in my community that we talk about is my partner's mood impacts me. What do I do in those moments?
Mm-hmm. Oh, such a good question. And that is so, you know, I'm going to mention here too, but with the codependency, since we're talking about it, it's magnified for those who can identify with those codependency traits, because we have been taught early on to kind of scan the environment, scan everybody else's moods, to, and if we see something is off, make them happy, fix it so that I'm okay, so that the environment is okay, everybody's at peace, we're good. So oftentimes we almost have this like extra power, right? I don't know, like a superpower of sensing somebody else's mood, even if it's a very subtle change. And I'm sure you've maybe experienced, you know, with your clients and just generally people in our lives, where they will come and say, I noticed my partner is distant from me, right? And but there hasn't been any like outwardly obvious behavior, right? That they had a fight or anything, just this energetic distancing even. And people are hypersensitive with shifts in the mood. And so for those people, especially, that can be hard when their partner is in a bad mood.
I was listening to you. I was thinking, oh, you know what? I'm starting to see a difference here. I know this clinically, but it's interesting to hear someone else talk about this, that there's a difference between, and maybe they even go together at times, they can, between codependency and high sensitivity. Because someone who is highly sensitive also has that experience of scanning the environment and taking in all of those things. But there's a difference in here. We're totally going off on a sidetrack. But I'm sensing almost in a way that that high sensitivity has some other pieces to it. And it's not just about, I feel my partner's mood. I feel the mood of the room change. Yeah?
Yes, absolutely. And that's the thing, right? That people sometimes can come in and they get labeled, you're codependent, when there is no codependency, right? Mm-hmm. For example, it's just, you know, maybe they had a relationship where their partner was unfaithful, right? So that goes into betrayal trauma. Right? Like I trusted fully. I allow them to do what they wanted to do. I didn't control anything. I didn't check their phones, nothing. And then I was just shocked with this huge wave of betrayal. And now everything they do, I have to question, like, is this actually, like, are you actually going to the grocery store? Right.
Right.
So that's not codependency.
That's not codependency either. Yes. Yeah. Right. Which is so important, because then what we do is we take this label and we map it to every experience. And yes, of course, when someone has broken your foundational sense of trusting of another person, you're going to have those urges. You're going to struggle with trust. You're going to want to be with them as a way to deal with that hypervigilance. Yeah, but that's not necessarily codependency.
Exactly. You know, and different attachment styles that we might have, right?
Absolutely.
I grew up in a family where there's no addiction. There's nothing like that. And yet with their, let's say, anxious attachment style, they might need that extra validation of, are we connected? You know, and any tiny movement of disconnection, which can be that distance, right? Mm-hmm. Being sensitive to noticing those nuances can create some anxiety for that person internally. And, you know, I think also some people are just better at reading body language and better at those nonverbal communication. I know we're trained to kind of pick up what maybe the average person wouldn't. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. So, and there's people who are like that without any training. You might be sensitive to someone's, you know, mood and those shifts in the mood. And you might pick that up before your partner does. They might be in a bad mood and not even realize that they're being grumpy. And you're like, something's off here, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So for listeners then, where we're coming to this point, which I always think is so important, is that whether you're looking at codependency or independence, or you're looking at attachment styles or personality traits or high sensitivity, or, you know, there's just all of these different ways that we can understand ourselves. And I think it's so important that we don't put ourselves in boxes and say, ha, that's how you are, or that's how I am. And now there's this piece of me, but instead we can understand ourselves across multiple facets. Yeah. And also understand our partners across different ways of understanding. Okay, so then the piece here, Anna, is let's talk a little bit about then what people tend to do in reaction to codependency, or perhaps even someone who has learned to shut out other people, which is that sense of being hyper independent and only focusing on that individuation and autonomy and not building any intimacy.
Yeah, yeah. So the opposite of codependency is not independence. It's interdependence. And I think a lot of people don't know the difference, right? So being too independent, where you don't need anybody and you know, are completely fine on your own, is also not healthy. So we don't want that. That's not what we want.
Yeah, we swing and miss the mark.
Yeah, yeah. I think the healthy place is somewhere in the middle, right? Where it's interdependency, where it's completely normal and okay to rely on your partner and to have a bit of dependency. You want to depend on your partner, right? That is the whole point of having some kind of intimate relationship. We want to depend on our friends. We want to depend on our family. We want to depend on our partners. And we want to rely on them. And we also want to have our own interests and know who we are and take care of ourselves and have our alone time if needed. And it looks different for each person, like you said, right? So the interdependency would be defined as, I can take care of myself and you can take care of yourself. And we both are taking care of our relationship and each other's emotional well-being in the relationship. So it's more of a, you know, a balanced way, I think, at looking at, it's not too dependency where you can't do anything outside with alone, you know, without your partner, and you feel like you don't exist unless they're next to you. And it's not the other extreme where you're so independent you can't get close to someone or let somebody in, right? It's somewhere in the middle.
I think people really struggle with finding that balance in there. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, it asks us to be vulnerable, not just with ourselves, but with another person, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah. And that vulnerability part is so difficult for most people, right? Because it goes right back to that place in our childhood where it wasn't safe. You can't be vulnerable with someone if you're not feeling safe first, emotionally safe. I'm not saying they're going to, you know, physically harm you, right? Obviously, that's
right
too. But I'm talking about it's a lot more subtle, right? If I feel like I show you my vulnerable place, my vulnerable self, if I show you my flaws, if I tell you what I want and need, will you leave me? Will you still care?
Mm-hmm. I think of the child experience where a child comes to you and says, this isn't feeling good for me. I don't want you to do this. And then the parent is defensive. Mm-hmm. And then what the child learns as a result of that, and how then it's really hard to share their experiences later on because of what's happened early on.
Yeah, yeah. It's gaslighting, isn't it? Right? Where, because emotions don't have to be logical. You feel what you feel, right? You can't tell someone, don't feel sad. Mm. Right? If you're angry, you know, you definitely don't want to say calm down, because that's the opposite, right? And I think same with early on when our kids come to us or they show strong emotions and they're sad or they're angry and we just dismiss them. Oh, you're not angry. You're just hungry, right? Or whatever it may be, right? Instead of allowing those emotions just to exist and they'll come and go, as with all of us, right? They're not, if we allow them to come and go, they won't be stagnant. And it's okay to feel those emotions, just to be a human being. That's what that means, really, right? And if we do the opposite, like you said, then we are teaching them a message of what you're feeling is wrong. Or if you tell me what you're feeling, you're going to get negative feedback. You're going to get some kind of criticism, some kind of punishment, and you're not going to feel okay. So guess what? That person is not going to grow up to be an adult who's going to show up and have conflict discussions or be vulnerable, right? It's not going to feel safe.
I think of all of our parents who, you know, we're all on this process of coming to discovering our own experiences and how we want to be different. And for listeners who do get into those places of, don't be angry, it's fine, but those kind of, I know it's well-intentioned. It is not from a place of, I want to gaslight my child, but that dismissing piece often comes from our own discomfort, doesn't it? In the sense of, I'm uncomfortable witnessing, and this actually just happened with one of my kids, lots of big feelings around interactions with friends. And I was so uncomfortable. I remember having these early interactions with friends, and they're so difficult. And so I could feel my discomfort coming up, and this narrative in my head almost of try to fix this, take this away. I don't want my child to feel this. And then stepping back and just being with what was showing up in front of me. I didn't need to solve it in that moment.
And I so appreciate you bringing that point. You know, and I'm going to jump all the way to the beginning of our conversation about trauma and definition of it. You know, I think oftentimes we connect, especially if we're coming from this attachment lens, right? Everything to our childhood, which then inevitably goes to our parents. And our parents and other parents might feel defensive, like, well, I was a good parent. And you were, you know. So what I want to, you know, for our listeners to really understand is that, first of all, it's okay to be a human being and make mistakes as a parent. We all do. And if you haven't, you will. So I think to embrace that. But also, even well-meaning parents can make mistakes and can cause trauma. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think that's important for us as parents to also accept that that can happen, because you cannot be on point every single minute of, you know, and say everything right. And we're going through our own healing most of the time. And we have our own upbringing and how we're used to managing things and what makes us feel, you know, strong sense of discomfort, right? And all of that shows up. So I appreciate you bringing that up, because I definitely do not want to have any parent or any person thinking, oh, my parents were this horrible. You know, no, well-intended people make mistakes all the time. The repair is what's most important in this case, whether you're in a relationship or it's your parent, you made a mistake, think about it, come back and connect with that person you made the mistake with, whether it's your child or your partner.
Circling back to what you said around noticing clients build this sense of authenticity, and that's them starting to break out of codependency. Let's leave the listener with one or two things that they could practice with building authenticity in their life. So if people are listening thinking, okay, so I tend to do some of the self-sacrificing. I don't share my hard feelings. I'm packaging a lot of my stuff up. It's not feeling great. where could somebody start? And of course, we know that if it's possible to reach out to a therapist and a licensed mental health clinician to be able to do some of this work, but where would you recommend people start?
Yeah, I mean, definitely therapy, but outside of therapy, you know, I think journaling can be helpful because you are kind of, and don't worry, no one is going to read your journal. You can, you know, throw it away after, shred it, burn it. But the idea.
My reaction, Anna, is no, not the journal.
I resisted because like, I don't want the dear diary. That's what we're thinking. But no, I think just dump everything on paper. And then this is the good part, right? When you write everything, ask yourself, what part of me is hurting right now based on what you wrote? Because it's not so much about what, you know, is happening or what's bothering you, but whatever ends up being on your paper, what bothers you, where you're hurting. Instead of saying I'm hurting, just get, let's go a little deeper and find out what part of me is hurting right now. And if you just allow that answer to come, sometimes it's like, well, it's the part of me who's been rejected so many times. It's the part of me that it wasn't safe for me to speak up. It's the part of me that got lied to, right? It's the part of me that's tired all the time and I have to please everybody, whatever comes up. The second question is, what does that part need to feel a little better? You're not going from 0 to 100 where you're feeling miserable. All of a sudden, you're going to be amazing, positive thinking here. That's not what we're doing. We're going from 0 to 1 or 2. What do I that part need right now, just to be taken care of a little bit and feel a little better? So you're doing the nurturing that maybe you didn't get as a child, that I often feel is kind of what's in this block towards authenticity, you know? And then give yourself that, right? It might be just something small. Again, I want to make it manageable, right? It can be, I need a nap, I'm tired. Or it can be, you know what? I need to speak up for myself in this situation. Great, who can help me practice what I'm going to say, right? Or I need to cry, great. And I need to go on the walk in nature. Just a tiny, tiny thing you can give yourself. But, you know, like you said, with the journaling, if you just do journaling, just put it away. Yeah, it's good, helpful. But I want to go a bit deeper and ask what part of me, identify what part of me is actually hurting and what does that part need right now?
Yeah. That's so good. That is such a powerful piece. Okay, Anna, what do you have going on? Where can people find you?
Let's see. So you can definitely visit our website, www.mytherapy.com. Also, we have an Instagram page, My Therapy Corner, where we post a lot of helpful you know, tips for relationships, trauma, anxiety, and more. Occasionally, we do have groups for codependency, of authentic living, all of that. And so if you're interested in that, definitely contact us through our website or Instagram and we'll connect you. Yeah. And then, you know, if you want, if you are in California, Florida, or New York and want to do some individual work or couples work, we have amazing therapists who are trained in all of this and they can definitely help. So again, I think the best way to contact us is through our website or just email directly info@mytherapycorner.com.
Anna, I'm so grateful for our conversation today around codependency. So let me ask you one last question, and that is, what is something that you do every single day that helps you live a meaningful life or one that's aligned with your values?
I love that question. So since becoming a mom, obviously, it's, time is very, very limited. But what I do is actually, two things. I'm going to blend them together here. And to be realistic, I don't do this every day. I wish I could, but I'm trying to squeeze in as much time as possible whenever I can. So also, if you're listening, don't feel like any of these things need to be done daily or else you're failing. No, like, do it whenever you can. But something that really helps me connect with my authentic self and figure things out when I'm struggling is, you know, going on walks with my dog, just being in nature, kind of like that time, just like I'm walking and I'm processing things and I'm thinking and getting some fresh air. The journaling prompt that I suggested, I do that sometimes as well. Just dump everything that's bothering me on paper and ask myself, honestly, what part of me is bothered by all of this or is hurting? What does that part need? I also find lately that, I mean, this is not for everybody, but cooking is very soothing for me. So I will like cook and listen to audiobooks, fiction, nothing to do with therapy, just kind of like away from, you know, my work world. that also helps me feel connected to myself.
I love that. I love that so much. Thank you, Anna, for sharing with all of us. Thank you for your time today and for enlightening us on just how powerful it can be to be authentic and to really slow down and ask yourself that question. I'm going to take that question away, which is, what's hurting? What part of me is hurting right now? Thank you so much.
I appreciate you so much for having me and for everything that you do. And we're putting this podcast out there for people to get this, you know, resource. It's so valuable.
Thank you.
Remember, this podcast is for educational purposes only and does not substitute for the care from a licensed mental health care provider. See you next week.
Settling is not an option for me. Everything I desire is already mine. What if you can have it all? Because every day is for the girls.
Hello, hello. Welcome to For the Girls podcast, hosted by Victoria Alario, for the girls who want more. Listening to For the Girls will have you ready to raise the bar, stop settling for the bare minimum, and start believing you can have it all, and step into the 2.0 version of you. You can catch a new episode of For the Girls every Monday across all podcast platforms. Until next time, girls.